it is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss, he got him! And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run, reaches up and makes the grab!
Swing and a miss, struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 310. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about some big news that hit the Phillies this week. Obviously, some changes were made, a big change made, something that a lot of people have been calling for a long time, finally came to fruition. John Mailey was let go as hitting coach. The big surprise is the man who replaced him, Charlie Manuel, the winningest manager in Phil's history. We'll get into all that in just a minute and the reasons why and who probably pulled the trigger on this. I think you read between the lines, it's pretty clear to see who was behind this decision. Coming up, I'm going to talk to the fabulous Ellen Adair, terrific actress and baseball expert. We're going to get her thoughts on the Phillies season thus far. She's, of course, a Phillies fan. I think all of you know who Ellen is at this point. We're going to talk to her in just a few minutes. We'll recap the first couple games of the Phillies Cubs series, including the Aaron Nola Cole Hamels matchup from Wednesday night. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. Again, a reminder, folks, just before we get into the podcast here, that if you haven't checked out the Hittin' Season Patreon, please do so. Any donation, any contribution you'd like to make to the Hittin' Season podcast will result in getting a little bit of extra bonus content for you. So go to patreon.com/hittinseason and you can find all of our bonus content there. We're going to be adding some more stuff here over the next couple of weeks as well. And just a reminder, if you have a friend who hasn't been sickened by the Phillies yet, is enjoying this baseball season, or is just as committed as you are to following this team and they don't know about the Good Fight podcast feed, would ask that you would point them in the direction of the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever it is that they get their podcasts. And of course, leave a rating and a review if you haven't done so. Let's jump into this thing now, kids. Charlie Manuel. Charlie coming back. And this is big for the brand, kids. Hittin' Season, of course, is named after one of Charlie's favorite sayings. It's hittin' season, baby. If it's late summer, that ball's flying out of the ball yard. And with the new baseballs, the juiced balls, it's been hittin' season all year, except in Philadelphia, where the Phillies have languished at the bottom of the pack in offense the entire season. You look at their season-long numbers, they're in the bottom third of every offensive category, and they are among the bottom four or five teams, not every offensive category. They're middle of the pack in on-base percentage. But when you're looking at home runs, runs scored, slugging percentage, all of the numbers that, with the exception of on-base percentage, people really care about right now, the Phillies have, of course, been among the league's worst, especially in the second half since the All-Star break. All of the Phillies' numbers across the board are way down. So many players are struggling. Rhys Hoskins is struggling. Bryce Harper has been uneven. I know when you get to the end of the season, Harper's overall counting stats might look pretty good, but you have to give it a full, lay it all out. And take into account what the rest of the league is doing and what their counting stats look like when you're talking about Bryce's. And JT Realmuto is hot right now, and that has been huge. He single-handedly won the game, the first game of the Cubs series on Tuesday night, and that was great to see. Scott Kingery seems to be picking it up, but just not enough guys hitting at the same time. And the performances are so uneven this year. We've talked about it a million times, and as I said on episode 309 of Hittin' Season, it was time for changes. It was time for changes. Something had to happen. I know the WIP Morning Show is just calling for a wholesale house cleaning of the general manager and especially manager Gabe Kapler. Well, Gabe Kapler is safe for now, but I think this move, that bringing aboard Charlie Manuel as the hitting coach, I don't think is good for Kapler's future. I'm going to get into more of that in just a second, but let's talk about how fascinating a move this is. I mean, the Phillies went out and they brought back the most popular manager, the winningest manager in team history now, to be under Gabe Kapler as this team's hitting coach. That's virtually unprecedented. That doesn't happen in baseball, not just in the Phillies organization. In baseball, because you can really see this as, I mean, and I don't think Charlie Manuel is this type of guy. He's not going to go out of his way to undercut the manager. And I don't think Gabe Kapler is a guy who minds having an experienced hand on board to help out, to get a different set of thoughts. Gabe Kapler has always been receptive to constructive criticism, at least as far as I has been my experience. And I think that continues to be the case when I hear him on the WIP Morning Show. They've been calling for him to just straight up be fired for weeks, and he still goes on every week and talks about what he's doing. I mean, I think that's a stand-up guy right there. But the results on the field haven't worked out. They haven't gotten the results that they've wanted, obviously. There are lots of reasons for that. But the offense has been perhaps the biggest disappointment because they've really only suffered one big loss, and that's Andrew McCutchen. Most of the guys they came into the season hoping to get contributions from are still here. They're just not producing. And so this is a fascinating move that I think raises a lot of questions. I'm going to get into some of those questions in just a second. But first, let's just play a couple of clips from the news conference. Matt Klentak and Gabe Kapler met with the media on Tuesday afternoon before the first game of the series to talk about the move. And if you're wondering, who made this decision? Was it Gabe Kapler? Was it Matt Klentak? Was it owner John Middleton or Andy McPhail? I think the answer is quite clear. When Klentak was asked how much of a role Middleton had in this decision.
Look, anytime we make a big organizational decision, we're very collaborative about that. So John definitely was aware of this, involved in this, as he has been for a lot of decisions we've made. Andy McPhail as well. But you know, when we make big decisions, they are done with a collaborative approach and a kind of a united front. So John was involved.
John was more than involved. John made this decision. You could tell from the body language. At least my opinion is, reading the body language of Klentak and Kapler yesterday, they were not happy to be there. And you know, I understand that. They just fired a guy. But I don't think that they were uncomfortable sitting up on the dais because they fired a friend. I think they were uncomfortable up there because this wasn't a decision they wanted to make or were ready to make. I think this is a decision they were told to make. I think this is a move they said that it came from. I think this is a move that came from on high. It just, they did not look comfortable at this news conference on Tuesday. They didn't want to be there having that answering questions about this. Because I think if it was up to Klentak and Kapler, Maley would still be this team's hitting coach. I honestly do. And Matt Gelb of The Athletic wrote about the decision to hire Manuel. And reading the piece in The Athletic, it sure seemed like a Middleton decision reading that. He noted that Middleton and Manuel had a couple of conversations over the last couple of weeks, one-on-one conversations about the team. You know, nobody knows exactly what they were talking about, but now we can assume that he was picking Charlie's brain on what to do here. And Maley and the rest of the staff seemingly has had all these guys thinking way too much up at the plate. And we know that Charlie Manuel's not that type of guy. And so it does raise a question about the fit of Charlie Manuel here. But let me play this second Matt Klentak clip here for you, because I thought this clip was interesting as well.
We are this close to achieving what we want to achieve this year and playing October baseball and winning in October. And I know that things have not been perfect. Have we had injuries? Yes. Have we had players that have struggled? Yes. Has it been perfect? No. But we are still this close in the middle of August, and a good hot streak will put us exactly where we want to be. And that's the message. The message is, we are not going to sit on our hands and do nothing. We are going to continue to push, and we are going to continue to try. And if everybody does what they can do, this team can play October baseball.
But they did sit on their hands and do nothing at the trade deadline. Really? I listen, you heard me talk about the fact that I did not think this team should have gone all in for Matt Boyd or go all in for one of the other controllable lefty starters that teams apparently wanted way too much for. The New York Yankees have more of a need for a guy like that than the Phillies do, and they didn't pull the trigger either because the prices were so insane. I didn't want them giving up Alec Bohm or Spencer Howard or any of their top prospects for somebody like that, because I think those guys are going to be a valuable part of this team probably as soon as next year. But I did think, and I gave them a pass for that. I gave them a pass for not landing a big fish at the trade deadline. But they should have gone out and gotten somebody like Sonny Gray or Tanner Roark. And they should have gone out and gotten one or two relievers like the Nationals and the Braves did, guys that didn't really cost them anything. Relievers that were not going to cost you a top 7 or 8 prospect. Maybe it costs you your number 9 or 10 prospect. The Phillies didn't do that. They went out and they signed Jason Vargas, or traded for Jason Vargas. They signed Drew Smyly. hoping to put Band-Aid on a chest wound. And Matt Klentak, the evening after the Vargas trade, when he was asked if they're going to make more trades, like, this is the if he's happy with the rotation as it's currently assembled, he said, these are the guys we're going to roll with. Now, maybe he didn't mean for that to sound like, well, this is what I got, so you know, let's just cross our fingers. But that's not going all in at the trade deadline. That's not doing everything you can. And they talked on Tuesday about you know, needing to make a move with 44 games left, that there is a sense of urgency here. And this is obviously something you do with a sense of urgency. But just days ago, we were being told by Gabe Kapler that 6 or 7 weeks is a long time. And you heard Klentak just talking about getting on a hot streak. If you want your team to get on a hot streak, you should have added another starting pitcher. You should have strengthened the bullpen instead of hoping, praying that Nick Pivetta, a month into his conversion from starter to reliever, and Zach Eflin, a month into his conversion from starter to reliever, were going to turn into the dynamic back of the bullpen arms that this team needed. You didn't even need a dynamic back of the bullpen arm. You needed some stability. You needed somebody to help get you through the end of the season instead of throwing Juan Nicasio and his 6 ERA out there. So that rings hollow to me, that cut, that last Klentak bite. Now, bringing in Charlie Manuel, maybe it helps, maybe it doesn't. But based on what Klentak had been saying in recent days, and based on what Kapler had been saying in recent days, and based on the Klentak comment I played for you, the first one, this does not seem like a decision that was coming from Matt Klentak. This seems like a decision that came from John Middleton to me. And so will Charlie Manuel help this offense? What's he going to do differently than John Maley? Well, I'm glad you asked. Charlie's kind of an old school guy, but he does believe in the same things that Gabe Kapler and the rest of the Phillies organization believes in. Keeping the ball off the ground, hitting for power, hitting the ball in the air. I don't know that Charlie officially believes in swinging for launch angle or swinging uppercut or anything like that. I think what Charlie Manuel is going to do is try and help these players from the information overload that they seem to be getting. This team, it seems, based on everything I've heard from Jim Salisbury and from other Phillies beat writers, that these guys are getting a ton of information thrown at them every day. And that it's probably, these guys are drowning in it. And Charlie Manuel's approach is simple. Don't let the first hittable pitch go by without attacking it. If you're in a 3-1 count, don't sit and let a fastball go by right down the middle. If you're ahead 1-0 or 2-0 in the count, you don't have to take strike one. This is especially true for Rhys Hoskins, who is now mired in another one of his month-long tailspins. This is typical from this guy. We've seen it in each of his three seasons. Since the All-Star break, Hoskins is hitting 179 with a 326 on base and a 368 slugging percentage heading into Wednesday's game. That's an OPS plus of about 80. In August, he's hitting 114. With a 291 on base percentage and a 227 slugging percentage with an OPS plus of 40. I think this is the guy that Charlie Manuel can do the most with. I think Rhys Hoskins is drowning in information. And, you know, I criticized Bryce Harper a couple of episodes ago for not watching any video. I still think if you're a player and you're not taking advantage of the technology on hand, watching video of pitchers and watching video of your swing to kind of figure out what's going on, I still think you're not doing enough to fix the problem. But there are players who don't want to see any of that stuff. They just want to go up there and they want to feel their way through it no matter what the results are. With Hoskins, with Harper, with Real Muto, with anybody else who's struggling, Charlie Manuel is going to keep it simple. And it's worked for him in the past when he was the hitting coach of the Cleveland Indians. He got those teams to rake. He had a lot of talent on that team, but he also made Carlos Baerga a really good player when Baerga was not a guy who anybody thought was going to be an all-star player. And he got a lot out of Kenny Lofton. He got more out of Albert Bell. I mean, it's possible, you know, this is also during the PED era with Albert Bell, so you never know. But, you know, these are the guys that Charlie Manuel has to come in and fix. He has to fix Rhys Hoskins. He has to fix, and you know what? 7 weeks might not be enough time. It might be. It might not be enough time. Andrew Knapp has more hits this month in eight at-bats than Hoskins does. Knapp has 3 hits this month. Hoskins has 2. So this is the problem here. Getting Rhys Hoskins to even things out and not be... You wonder if there is Hoskins just going to be a Pat Burrell? or is there more there? And Pat Burrell was a good complimentary slugger, but he was not a 2-3-4 hole hitter on a championship team. He was their 5-hole hitter guy, 5- and 6-hole hitter guy. And Pat Burrell was great in that role. But they're counting on Rhys Hoskins to be a cornerstone here. And he's not playing like one. He's not consistent enough. He doesn't provide enough power. He doesn't provide enough impact on the field. At least not this season and last season, when he's been so streaky and up and down. This is a guy Charlie Manuel will be tasked with helping to fix over these last 7 weeks. And who knows, if Charlie Manuel really does a great job over these last 6 or 7 weeks, who's to say he doesn't come back next year? But that's the question. The last 7 weeks of this season, it's going to be all about, can Charlie Manuel help these guys unlock some talent? And Kapler is absolutely in a no-win situation. I wrote about this for the Good Fight right after the news came out and mentioned that if this team goes well, if this team recovers, Manuel's going to get all the credit. And if this team continues to do poorly, Klentak is going to get the blame. Not Klentak. Well, maybe Klentak, but Kapler is who I meant to say. Kapler is going to get the blame. Manuel will get the credit if things go well. Kapler will get the blame, and that might not be fair. But the team was underperforming, has been underperforming these last 2 seasons under Kapler. And if things magically turn around with the addition of Charlie Manuel, it's going to be hard to frame it any other way. So Kapler's really in a bind here. And, you know, you wonder what message this sends, what John Middleton is sending to everybody. Is he basically saying you're all on borrowed time? Or is this legitimately just, hey, let's try and save this season. We still believe in Kapler. We still believe in Klentak. Let's just try and save this season, and then we'll start with a new hitting coach next year. But these are the unanswered questions. I mean, this is the most beloved manager in Philly's history. How's he going to work with Gabe Kapler? Will Kapler feel threatened? Is it smart for the Phillies to turn to kind of an older school guy here who, again, believes in a lot of the things the Phillies believe in, but doesn't necessarily go about it the way the Phillies are having all of their minor leaguers go through it and the way they've had all of their major leaguers go through it for the majority of the season? Now, it wasn't working for the majority of the major leaguers. We'll see what it does with the minor league guys. Alec Bohm seems to be having a good year. There are some other offensive players that are having decent seasons, but there's not a lot of top prospects in the Phil's minor league system offensively anyway at the moment. In an era when the Phillies are, when Major League Baseball teams are hiring young analytically minded guys, it seems like the analytically minded guys the Phillies had with John Mailey and have with Chris Young, the pitching coach, are not getting through to these players. Is it the players or is it the coaches? We're going to find out, at least on one side of this team, whether or not it's the players or the coaches, at least for 7 weeks. If he leaves, when Manuel leaves, do the Phillies go outside the organization and bring somebody in? Or do they promote Pedro Guerrero or something like that? I would imagine if they were going to promote Pedro Guerrero next year, who's the assistant hitting coach, they would have done that right now. So this is, and we have to remember too with John Mailey, the Phillies did not lure him away with a promotion. The Cubs let him go. The Cubs had decided they didn't want John Mailey any longer, and when his contract was up, they said, okay, bye. And so it makes you wonder, why did that happen? And the Phillies jumped on him, and we saw 2 years of uninspiring offense. Listen, I mean, 2 years is not a long, long time, but it's a pretty good sample size here. And so the Phillies trying to save their season. Again, they are just 2 games out of the wild. They were just 2 games out of the wild card when Klentak made those statements. They are in the hunt. Of course, if you look at the Fangraphs playoff odds coming into Wednesday, they're at 8.4% behind the Nationals, Cardinals, Mets, Brewers, and Diamondbacks for those two wild card spots. And you wonder, are there any other moves coming? That's the other thing. Are there any other shoes that are going to drop? Matt Klentak indicated no at the news conference, but NBC Sports' Jim Salisbury indicated that more changes could be coming. Is Chris Young... Did the Phillies make a monumental mistake in getting rid of Rick Kranitz and keeping Chris Young? It would be highly... The reason I don't think Chris Young is necessarily getting fired is because it would be the admission of a monumental mistake. Now, listen, the Phillies did... This offseason, rectify a mistake, and that was with the Carlos Santana trade. Having Carlos Santana on this team this year would be really helpful. He's been a monster for Cleveland. But there was nowhere to play him if you wanted Rhys Hoskins to play first base. So I get why the Phillies did what they did last year, but that's the thing. A lot of the decisions the Phillies have made over these last couple of years have made sense, but when none of them work, or when very few of them work, and you see players get better in other places, it makes you wonder why. Is it teaching? Is it the decision-making process? Is it Chris Young? Or is it the fact that the evaluators, Matt Klentak and the scouts, misjudged what Nick Pivetta and Zach Eflin could do? These guys have so much talent. Why can this team not get more out of these guys? It's a mystery. None of us know. And that's the question the Phillies are going to answer over these last 7 weeks. I mean, right now, the rotation's in tatters. I don't know where this hot streak is coming from, unless the Phillies suddenly start averaging 8 runs a game, which is what they're going to have to do. And if so, then yeah, you give Manuel the credit. And then I don't know what happens this offseason. If this team surges, if this team's offense surges and carries them to a postseason spot, I have no idea what's happening in 2020. I have no idea. If the Phillies make a playoff run, then Gabe Kapler is safe. You don't fire a manager who goes on a playoff run. But if this team wins the wild card game, and then loses 3 games in the first round of the playoffs, is Kapler back? Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. There are so many mixed messages coming out of this organization right now. I don't think they know what to do. I don't think this organization knows what to do right now. They tell you there's a lot of time left in the season, and yet then they go and they make a move to fire the hitting coach with a month and a half left. If you're going to make this move, they should have made it a month ago. If you're going to make more changes, make them now. Because on one side of your mouth, you're saying there's a lot of time, and another side of your mouth, you're saying, okay, now there's a sense of urgency. We need these guys to hit. Well, just a few days ago, I thought this was a marathon, not a sprint. Like I said last week, it's a sprint. There's no way around it. It is a sprint from this point on. You're in the pennant race. It's a race. There's a reason they call it the pennant race and not the pennant jog or the pennant stroll. It's a race at this point. It's a race to the postseason. And the Phillies want to get back there for the first time since 2011. And they're hoping Charlie Manuel, the last guy to get him there as manager, can take them there as the hitting coach. Up next, we're going to talk to Ellen Adair about all this, as well as what she thinks of Hoskins and Harper, the pitching staff, Matt Klentak, all that stuff we're going to throw her direction. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. Well, joining us to talk about all of the craziness that has enveloped this baseball team over the last couple of days is the great Ellen Adair, a fantastic actress and a phenomenal baseball mind. As many of you know already, you can follow her on Twitter at Ellen_Adair. Ellen, thank you so much for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you?
Oh, my God. It's just my pleasure to be here. And, you know, I'm great because the Philly is just completely dominated the Chicago Cubs. So I think the last time I was on this podcast, they completely dominated the Mets. And I remember, like, we were so happy. And I feel like maybe you should have me on the podcast more often. I don't really believe that kind of coincidence. But, you know, now that I think it seems quite likely that the Phillies are going to have, hooray, like, recaptured third place.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be happy for a second on a Phillies podcast, yes, which I think hasn't been happening a lot lately.
It's been gloomy. There's no doubt about the fact these last few podcasts that I've done, at least, have been a little on the gloomy side. And frankly, that's kind of where I felt like this podcast was gonna head until the game here on Wednesday night, as we're recording this right after the Phillies beat the Cubs 11-1 in Charlie Manuel's first official game as hitting coach. And yes, hitting season is here, folks. We have Bryce Harper hit a couple of homers. Real Muto hit a grand slam. You had Rhys Hoskins at the top of the lineup. Before we get any further into this, I did want to mention that you have a film coming out in October called Trick. You're going to star opposite Omar Epps. Can you tell us just a little bit about it before we get into the baseball stuff?
Sure. So it's a sort of a horror action movie. So it's very much a Halloween themed movie. That's where the trick comes from. It's a sort of intentionally old school type slasher film. I think it'll be really fun. I play the sheriff in the town where all of the, you know, creepy stuff goes down, and Omar Epps plays the, you know, the detective who is trying to figure things out. So, yeah, for anybody who has seen season two of The Sinner, which I'm also in, which is streaming on Netflix right now, the analogy that I kept on making is that, like, I am the Natalie Paul to Omar Epps' Bill Pullman. Maybe a deep reference to make, but if anybody's seen the Sinner, then they'll get what I'm talking about.
Yeah. No, I've seen a few episodes, and I know exactly where you're going. Absolutely. Well, we'll have you on again, obviously, when that movie comes out, and we'll talk some more Phillies, and maybe talk some playoffs as well. But you may have seen Ellen on the MLB Network recently. She's been making the rounds on a bunch of different baseball podcasts. Some really big baseball podcasts. Certainly bigger than this one, but obviously, as a Phillies podcast, you know, we get to talk about the hometown team. And, you know, I don't think any of us thought Charlie Manuel was going to have, you know, an immediate impact. And, you know, listen, maybe they would have done this with or without Charlie Manuel. Cole Hamels, who was the starting pitcher for the Cubs tonight, he had a nice ovation his first game back to Philadelphia, but he was not sharp tonight. He threw a lot of meatballs right down the middle of the plate. But nevertheless, the stadium was electric on Wednesday night, Alan, and the offense was smoking the ball all over the place. And Charlie's first game in the dugout, obviously it was like a party atmosphere. I don't know if Charlie had anything to do with what happened tonight, if it was just a happy coincidence, or maybe this is what we're going to see the rest of the way. But what are your thoughts on the Phillies bringing Charlie in to be the team's hitting coach?
Yeah, well, I mean, it really looks like he's been amazingly effective so far, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, you know, watching the game, I think everybody could see that their approach was pretty different from what it's been.
Yeah.
And even though I like patient hitting in a vacuum, I appreciate that they were really aggressive during this game. And I think that they need to do that, if only to just sort of disrupt the scouting report on them. But, you know, I've very much been with you on the, like, what does a major league hitting coach do mystery bus.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe we're all driving that bus to a magical location where we're going to find out what it is. My initial reaction was that getting Charlie Manuel was overwhelmingly a PR move. Mm-hmm. That's basically a free PR move. Like,
yeah.
Clearly the fans are upset that the Phillies didn't make better trade deadline moves and that they're playing like one of the worst teams in baseball since the All-Star break. And so let's give them a reason to maybe like buy tickets for the last month and a half of the season, and we'll fire this guy that anybody who knows his name, they're mad at him. And we'll hire, one of the best beloved managers in franchise history. That's going to go great. So I'm sort of unsure about whether or not, you know, this is a very small sample size that we were seeing today. But also, like, I'm not immune to PR, and I'm glad that the Phillies didn't wait until the offseason to make a change.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm the kind of dweeb who probably would have been just as excited if they decided to, like, promote Jason Oshart or something. But if they're going for a l'esprit de corps in the clubhouse and in the stands, it's hard to argue with this move.
Well,
and it's probably a better move, to be honest.
Well, sure. And Charlie is already in the organization. He obviously has worked with some of these guys when they were in the minor leagues and in spring training and all that stuff. And some of the articles from Matt Gelb in The Athletic really detailed how many conversations John Middleton has had with Manuel over the last couple of weeks as the offense has really sputtered. And I think for me, his primary objective here is to get Rhys Hoskins on track, who he's just been mired in a dreadful slump here in the month of August. Really, since the All-Star break, Hoskins has struggled, and maybe ironing out some of his ups and downs and seeing if there's a little bit more there than what we've seen from him over the last couple of years. I think with Hoskins, you see a guy who could be a breakout player, but there's something holding him back. It doesn't seem like he's maybe they are getting everything out of him, and maybe this is what it is. But to me, I think that's one of the primary guys that Charlie Manuel is going to be here to try and help him figure out when to be aggressive, when to work a walk, when to see a lot of pitches, and when to be aggressive in the count and take advantage of a meatball in the way that many of the Phils hitters did tonight.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's actually one of the sort of data points that has me hoping that this is going to be an actually effectual change. Because, you know, it's hard because we don't have a huge sample size for Rhys Hoskins from before the days of John Mailey. But if you look at what he did in 2017 when he came up, which of course, like, granted, I know it's not that many plate appearances.
Yeah.
This sort of interesting thing is if you look at his infield slice chart on Baseball Savant, which is kind of like a spray chart, but just with percentages, mm-hmm. you can see that in 2017, he wasn't pulling the ball as extremely all the way to the left
yeah.
as he has in the last couple of years. And for 2017, his hottest zone is slightly further to the outside than it is in 2018, 2019. So it could just be that he's been told to wait for a certain kind of pitch because analytics say that a pulled fly ball is the most useful ball that you can hit. And he's dutifully doing that because his eye is so good that he can just be like, well, I was told to wait for this pitch, and so I will.
Yeah.
And maybe he's dutifully doing that, even though there are others that he could hit, even if he couldn't necessarily hit them for a home run.
That's a fair point. I hadn't considered that, because you're right. When he did first come up, we did see him go the other way a little bit more. He's got power to all fields. There's no doubt about that. And with Hoskins especially, but also I think with Harper, you know, it's a lot of the same thing. I just wonder with Hoskins, do you think that he has tapped into his full potential, or do you think there's more there?
Well, so take this with like a more than a grain of salt, like a salt lick. I don't know, because I love Rhys Hoskins and I will always love Rhys Hoskins because that is the nature of my loyalty. But I think there could totally be more there. I feel like what we've seen from Hoskins obviously are periods of being like Rhys lightning and then periods of being whatever is the opposite of that. I don't know, like Rhys dry spell. Rhys, what did you say?
Sludge. I was trying to think of the opposite of lightning is about what I could come up with.
I guess I went meteorological just because don't know the musical Grease that well. Rhys drought. How about
there
that?
There you go.
But like from what I understand, slumps are not an entirely magical thing that just descends on a player. They have to do with pitchers making adjustment on a batter mm-hmm. based on the information that they have. And so like I'd like to believe that the right hitting coach could be like, okay, Rhys, even for just a little while, we're going to see if you can get results on being more aggressive on like these balls and these ones, even if it's just to see if it can change the book on you. Kind of like changing a batting stance just to change it back, but informationally. Mm. And probably this has already happened, and that's why we've seen him have slumps and then, you know, periods of, like, amazing effectiveness. So I'm not here trying to be an armchair coach, because I'm clearly not qualified to do that.
Well, none of us are, really. I mean, you know, we're all just kind of guessing from the outside anyway. And that's why it was hard for me to advocate firing any one person or the other. You know, I'm not that guy. I don't do the whole, you know, so-and-so needs to be fired, because I don't know. I thought it was interesting. You know, it's just, I don't know. I don't know what these guys are getting. I do think it's interesting, though. I was listening to the At the Yard podcast that Jim Salisbury does with Corey Seidman for NBC Sports Philadelphia, and he was talking about the fact that a lot of these young hitters, they get overloaded with information, and there's a little bit of paralysis by analysis that goes on with some of these guys, and Charlie Manuel's a guy who kind of thinks about it from the other end. He agrees with the Phillies' philosophy in hitting home runs, keeping the ball off the ground, elevating the baseball, barreling it up, hitting it to the center of the field, all that stuff. That's not necessarily a new school approach. There's a lot of offensive minds, a lot of hitting coaches in the past who have said that's the optimal way to hit the ball for power. And when you're a power hitter, that's the whole ball game. But you know, Charlie Manuel is also a guy who wants to keep it simple. He wants hitters to be able to just kind of do their thing at the plate and let their natural abilities take over. And I wonder, with John Mailey, listening to what Salisbury was saying, is something along the lines with there was too much information coming at these guys, that there was just too much to process. And I think that was one of the things that Scott Kingery struggled with last year, and maybe that he just has kind of, you know, eschewed some of that information to kind of simplify things a little bit. And my think, is there a possibility, you think, that with Mailey now gone, maybe that you can continue the new school thinking of how you want to hit the ball, but maybe just do it a little bit differently in practice?
Completely, yeah. And I mean, that's one of the few things that definitely, I don't know, gave me pause about John Mailey, was that, you know, Scott Kingery inarguably has been the Phillies' most improved hitter this season. And I think it's been decently well publicized that he said in enough articles that I have read anyway, mm-hmm. like, oh, basically, I just stopped trying to do what they were trying to get me to do last season.
Right.
And I just started doing whatever I wanted to do and then was like very successful.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things where I was like, that seems like sort of maybe an indictment mm-hmm. of the approach, you know, or like depending upon who the hitter is, you know? I mean, I think it's very clear that, I'm sorry, my dog has a lot to say about.
He's fired up. It's hitting season. He's excited.
she's really excited. She's a big Phillies fan. Now I've forgotten where I was with this. Oh, just that was one of the things that I think really gave me pause about the hitting coach strategy, about like, what does a hitting coach do, mm-hmm. you know? And certainly, and I don't mean to bring this to my experience, but my experience is all that I have to bring, which is like, there are directors who can totally get in an actor's way by making them too self-conscious. And, you know, I've always said that not my least favorite kind of director is the kind of director that just actually like holds a nice space for you to do the thing that you do and doesn't give you a lot of direction. I'm not advocating that because obviously acting and baseball are very different, but like I can see how that would not work for some guys.
Sure.
Oh, I remember the thing I was going to say, which is just that any hitting coach will say hitters are different, and so you need a different approach for different hitters.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that Charlie Manuel says that, and I know that John Mailey said that as well. So, you know, I think that's a sort of a difficult part of the puzzle. And some hitters, yeah, you just sort of need to maybe get out of their way a little bit or get out of their heads.
And we'll see how this moves on for the rest of the season. Obviously, the Phillies are not going to score 11 runs every game and hit a bunch of home runs. They're going to continue to have their struggles. But it is just, it's really interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, everybody that is going to be talking about the Charlie Manuel effect after the game tonight. And that was one of the things I had mentioned earlier in the podcast with bringing Charlie Manuel here. It almost feels like now Gabe Kapler is kind of in a no-win situation. If this team does well, Charlie Manuel is going to get a lot of the credit, if not all the credit for it. But at the same time, it might save Gabe Kapler's job. So Gabe Kapler may not care about credit if he can get this team to the postseason. So I wonder what your thinking is about the hiring itself. You know, I think... It seems pretty clear that this was a move directed from on high, that John Middleton was urging for a change to be made and has had discussions with Charlie Manuel in recent weeks. And this seems to me like a John Middleton type move. How concerned do you think Gabe Kapler should be about his future? Not necessarily that Charlie Manuel is going to take over as manager, but just that he felt like the best manager in Phillies history needed to be in the dugout to help these hitters and hopefully try and save Gabe Kapler's job. I'm not sure how this plays out after 2019.
Yeah, well, and I'm not sure that it does save his job, just because, as you said, it's really a lose-lose proposition for him, just because if the Phillies finish in fourth place, then it's hard to see the front office believing that they can get the fan base to rally around a third year of the like same old regime.
Yeah.
And if a miracle occurs and they win more than two games in a row, then it's going to be because of Charlie and not Cap via public perception. And I mean, I think that the Charlie move is a win for Charlie, yeah, and actually maybe even for the Phillies organization, because, you know, either he is amazingly successful, or if he's not, like, oh, it wasn't actually that much time for him to do anything. But I think that the front office is smart enough to see through that, of course. But I think the question is whether or not, like, Middleton, which is, as you guys have been saying, like, pretty much the only person we can trust to care what we, the fans, feel at the moment, yeah, whether or not he cares enough about public perception driving ticket sales to want a larger change to be made. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that the front office has sort of said, no, we really believe in Kapler, but, like, everybody says that they believe in somebody until they're fired, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that always happens. And I mean, oh no, sorry, go ahead.
No, please. I was just going to say, I mean, there's an old saying that, you know, baseball managers are hired to be fired. You know, that Charlie Manuel's
totally
fired. You know what I mean? Like, that's just the way it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like part of a manager's job to be the punching bag for public opinion based on his team's record. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, look at the swing of opinion on Mickey Callaway and Brody Van Wagenen.
Yeah.
And like, I myself, have been on a roller coaster of Gabe Kapler opinion. I guess, actually, it's been more like that ride where they, like, strap you in and your feet dangle down and you're lifted way up and then they drop you.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know what that's called, but it's like that. Or like that if I only ever got half the way up before they dropped
right,
me.
Right, right, right.
So, I mean, if you want a full-on Gabe Kapler endorsement, you're not going to get it from me. But on the other hand, I've never had much time for fire the manager talk like you. I think it just feels uncomfortably sort of Marie Antoinette to me, like this person's to blame. Mm-hmm. And just knee-jerk negativity is so easy, and pointing out the actual source of the problem is so much harder.
I was just gonna say, it's nuanced. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that Gabe and you, I think, you know, you're of the same opinion. I think, you know, Justin maybe is not as much, but I don't think Gabe himself is directly to blame for the way that the team performs, you know? And I get that he checks a lot of boxes for what you want in your 2019 coach, or at least what I want. Like, I want an analytics-driven coach, because mm-hmm. that's how you keep up with the Joneses these days. And I want a coach who's good with the players. And Kapler seems to be liked by his players, which is what I give him at the end of the day, if nothing else. But what I think Kapler is very much culpable for is the coaches he brought in, because I think it would just be, like, unscientific of us, even if we're not totally sure what they do, to look at the results of the past season and three quarters and be like, no, I guess these players are just mediocre, because they're not. Yeah. We know they're not. We know they're good players. So it's time to test the other variables. And I guess that's what's going on.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the way to look at it, testing the other, because you can't swap out all of the players. The first thing you can do is swap out, okay, is the coaching or the messaging not getting through? And I know one of the things that people have been talking about this week was the Sunday Night Baseball game, in which Alex Rodriguez kind of was managing from the press box, and in that Kevin Pillar at bat when the game was tied at 8, Nick Pivetta was in and he fell behind 3-1, and A-Rod said that he thought they should walk Pillar because Pillar was hot at the time to get to Brandon Crawford, who had been struggling at the time. And Gabe Kapler answered that on the 94 WIP morning show this morning and basically was saying, yeah, I don't really put a whole lot of stock into that, because you don't look at hot streaks and cold streaks when you're deciding on a matchup. Historically speaking, Pillar is the matchup that you want with Pivetta, because historically speaking, Pivetta has harder time with left-handers than he does right-handers, and Pillar has the kind of swing that we like against Pivetta. It ended up, you know, A-Rod was right in that particular case. And so that my whole point in mentioning this is, when you're talking about the data, you want a data-driven manager, like you mentioned. Gabe Kapler is a guy who's looking at the data, but are they looking at the data the correct way? Because I personally feel like you should take into consideration whether or not a hitter is hot or a hitter is cold. When Rhys Hoskins is in one of his cold streaks, if I'm a pitcher and I fall behind 3-1, I'm going after him because there are times when Rhys Hoskins can't hit water if he's standing on sand. But you know, when a guy is red hot, there are times you do need to stay away from a guy. You need to, especially if you fall behind an account. And I think ignoring that is you know, it's using the analytics. You're using the information there, but you're using the analytics, the information that you feel is more apropos at the moment. And in that case, that's one of those types of things. That's an example of how I think maybe Gabe Kapler has to learn a few different things about how to use the analytics. That's just an example. I don't know that he's done that over and over again. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that particular incident and using analytics as a manager, because I know that in the moment it can't be easy.
Yeah, no, totally. And I'm actually with you on this. And I feel like for a baseball fan, I think I skew towards appreciating analytically driven teams. You know, I have been reading, well, I'm done with it now, the excellent MVP Machine by Ben Lindbergh and Travis Sawchuk. And, you know, it filled me with feelings of like deep unease that I was like, I don't think the Phillies are very good at this. Mm. However, I think that that's, you know, that's the direction that the game is going. And so I think you need to keep, a manager needs to keep up with that. Otherwise, they're going to fall behind. However, I don't think that it's the be-all, end-all. I don't think that that's how 100% of decisions should be made. I think that that should be part of the information that you take in. But like whether or not somebody is hot right now, just because it's still in the realm of like baseball magic rather than baseball science, mm-hmm. doesn't mean it's not real.
Yeah.
Players get hot and then they get cold. And like analytics don't know why yet, but that doesn't make it not true.
Right.
And it doesn't make it something that you shouldn't factor in. You know,
yeah.
Guys have good days and bad days. And I think it's part of your responsibility as a manager to not just be a number cruncher, but to be on the field and like seeing your guys and seeing their guys and taking that as part of your information as well. You know, but I think that that's very much the old school approach, that's everything that you're going by. And I disagree that that should be everything that you're going by as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yes, like if it were me, I think I would have intentionally walked Pilar, maybe not to start out the at bat,
right,
but maybe after falling behind 3-1. And I think that has not only to do with like, you know, how hot is Pilar right now, but also like how well is Nick Pivetta pitching right now?
Yeah.
That's got to be part of your calculus.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just imagining that a player is a collection of their numbers is not right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I say that even as a person who is like a big fan of the number side of the baseball.
Yeah, no, I am too. And that's, listen, I mean, the Red Sox and the Cubs and the Astros and the Dodgers, the great teams use analytics.
Yeah.
They just know, I think they have a better idea what to use and when to bring in some of the baseball feel aspects to the game, in addition, marrying those two things together. And, you know, the Phillies for years were behind in all this, and they're probably still catching up a little bit. But it's also fair to wonder whether or not Kapler, who really this is his first managing job ever, you know,
it's
whether or not he's still playing a little bit of catch up. It may not be as intuitive to him as it is to maybe Alex Cora or Aaron Boone, a couple of guys who were hired at the same time as him, who have had a little bit more success and seem to have kind of eased into the managerial role a little bit more smoothly.
I think he's certainly better than he used to be. Like, I think he has learned.
I agree.
And is less sort of by the books. And I think that, you know, maybe what's hard is he could have been right, you know, maybe even 50%, more than 50% of the time, his reasoning actually would have led to the right thing. And I think a fear that I have is that like he will be fired, which I'm sort of agnostic about, but that he will be fired and then they'll be like, oh, well, you know, those analytics, they just failed. And it's like, no, well, maybe just like that guy wasn't super great at reading them and integrating them into the on-field play.
Yeah.
You know, which doesn't mean that a manager using analytics doesn't work. So, yeah, I just sort of fear that indictment from, you know, the fans.
Yeah, no, the Phillies can't go back to the Stone Age, which is, I think, what a lot of fans want them to do if they fire Gabe Kapler. And that's absolutely the wrong move to make. And I don't think they will. They've invested too much time and money into making this a modern organization. I don't think they're going to go backwards. But the last person to talk about here, and this will be my last thing before I let you go, is Matt Klentak. You know, I mean, I'm watching that news conference on Tuesday when they announced that Charlie Manuel had been hired and they had fired Manley. It looked to me, they looked uncomfortable, and, you know, I don't think it was a decision that was his to make. He was told what to do. I think if it was up to Klentak, Manley would still be the hitting coach and let the thing ride out until the end of the season. I might be wrong about that, but that's the impression I get, and if so, it doesn't make me feel very confident that Klentak wouldn't pull the trigger on removing Manley, that it had to be kind of foisted upon him. But again, that's just my speculation. One of the things I will say about Klentak is that he's talking about having a sense of urgency here, and obviously when you're moving on from your hitting coach with 44 games left or however many games there is obviously some sense of urgency that the team feels, and yet they didn't really do much at the trade deadline. I don't know about you, Ellen. I was okay with them not burning a top prospect to go out and get somebody, but I am surprised they didn't get like a Tanner Roark, and I am surprised they didn't get a relief pitcher or two like the Braves and the Nationals did. And I think they really hurt their playoff chances by not doing something more at the trade deadline. What are your thoughts on Matt Klentak as GM right now?
Yeah, if I'm like pissed at anybody, it's Matt Klentak actually, and I say that as somebody who is like slow to anger, like quick to be sad about things, but like slow to actually be angry.
Yeah.
What I was mad about was that they didn't get Stroman after I saw the price. Yeah. You know, if it would have been Adonis Medina and a high A pitching prospect, then I'm in, because it doesn't just help the team this season. It helps them next season.
Yeah.
I mean, I you know, agree with you that I didn't want to trade Baum and I didn't want to trade Howard. But I would have been in on any starting pitcher that I could have gotten for less than them. Now, look, like maybe that's nobody. Maybe the prices were just that high and nobody wanted to play with the Phillies unless they would take one of those two toys out of their toy box. But in my view, if you're going to make the Real Muto trade for this season and next, then you've got to go in with anything that's not going to help you next year or that's wasted capital. Mm. I mean, granted, I think that the Real Muto trade might have helped feather the nest for Harper, and so that gives us a 13-year window, but I don't want to talk about that.
yeah.
Because I feel like I would at least have gotten a good relief pitcher, like exactly you said, you know, and like the guys who made the journey over to the NL East, like Chris Martin or Mark Melanson or Daniel Hudson. I mean, I sort of had my eye on Jake Diekman because he's had a FIP much lower than his ERA for most of the season and got traded to Oakland. But like, who knows if that's more of Klentak not wanting any piece of the Ruben Amaro Jr. tenure, which, you know, it pisses me off.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Like, it seems like he wants to be right more than he wants anything else. Like, he wants to be right and smart more than he wants to win. And I know you guys have talked about this on the pod, but it's just completely my opinion too. It's like he wants to sort through the bargain bin so that if he hits on something, he'll be the genius, and if he didn't, he won't be seen as stupid. And like, I want his choices to succeed, all of them, even Jason Vargas. Like, yeah, they're smart, cheap moves, and the Phillies have gotten some value from the church charity box that Matt Klentak has been sorting through. But what Klentak was telling the team was, you're not worth anything. And that makes me mad. You know, no wonder the guys feel kind of demoralized when the front office isn't backing them up by giving them something really good that could have been useful this year and next. Like, I didn't want a rental because they're not winning the World Series this year, but there could have been a way to not give up on this year that would have really been improving their chances for next year too.
Totally agree, Ellen. And it is it's always great talking some ball with you. Now that we've officially entered hitting season with Charlie Manuel here, it's been
let's hope.
Like, keep our fingers crossed that the offense will keep rolling again. Make sure you are following Ellen on Twitter if you don't already at Ellen_Adair catcher. Catch the Sinner USA on Netflix, kids. Season 2. Go ahead and check that out. She's fantastic in that. And of course, we'll have you back on again in October when your new movie Trick is coming out, and we'll talk a little bit of October baseball, and hopefully maybe, fingers crossed, hand to God, we see the Phillies in a wild card game. You never know.
The wild card could happen. It's not impossible.
It's not crazy. It's not crazy. Ellen, thank you so much for coming back on Hitting Season. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Well, up next, we're going to dive into this Phillies-Cubs series just a little bit, the first two games of it anyway, and talk a little bit about the Hamels and a little bit more about the Hamels and Nola start from tonight. That's up next right here on Hitting Season. And we're back on Hitting Season. So after the first two games of the Cubs series, the Phillies are, hitting the ball a little bit. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Like I was just talking about with Ellen, I don't know how quickly and how much what we saw in the 11-1 win has to do with Charlie Manuel. I mean, it's probably just a coincidence that the night that he's named hitting coach, this team goes on an incredible roll. And maybe it's coinciding with Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto, who are getting hot independently of Charlie Manuel getting here. Corey Seidman had these numbers just a few minutes ago after the game ended. 6 home runs in his last 11 games, 21 RBIs in his last 25 games, a .400 on base percentage since June 30th. He's on pace for 33 homers and 113 RBIs this year. He's hitting .378 with runners in scoring position. Nights like tonight and nights like the one he had in San Francisco the other night are the types of nights that, you know, I'm not expecting a 2-homer game from Bryce Harper every week. That would be asking quite a bit, but impact, the guy having an impact, and JT Realmuto right now is having a tremendous impact in the middle of the lineup. This is why they got these two guys. And so after the 11-1 win on Wednesday night, the Phillies are now 4 games over .500. Depending on how the rest of the night shakes out, they'll either be 1 game out of the wild card or 2 games out of the wild card. As we record this, they're 1.5 games out, trailing the Brewers by a half a game. The St. Louis Cardinals are holding that second wild card spot as we speak. But the Washington Nationals are a game and a half up on St. Louis. The Phillies 62-58 on the season. Obviously, they'll finish off the series. They'll finish up the series on Thursday against the Cubs. Cole Hamels got a really nice reception in his return, but the pitching duel that we were expecting between Aaron Nola and Cole Hamels did not surface. And, obviously that's good for the Phillies. It is kind of disappointing Cole Hamels really did not perform here in his return to Philadelphia, but obviously we're going to take it because we needed an outburst like this from the Phils. It does make me wonder about Cole Hamels with the Phillies next year, and the only thing that gives me pause is that he is getting older and how many years he would want on a deal, but the home run per nine rate for him this year has been very low for him and lower than the league average, and you wonder if that's going to jump back up next season, or maybe he's been pretty good since he returned to the National League as far as keeping the ball in the ballpark. So maybe not. Maybe Cole Hamels has learned to kind of keep the ball in the yard. That was not the case here on Wednesday when he failed to get an out in the third inning and was driven from the game in the third. Only 2 innings pitched on his record, and the Phillies tagged him mercilessly in this ball game. On the other side of the coin, Aaron Nola is in a groove, folks, in his last 11 starts, has a 2.09 ERA and a 0.982 whip. 83 strikeouts in 73 innings over that time. He's given up just 48 hits. The Aaron Nola from last year right now is back, and the Phillies don't have much in their starting rotation. They need Aaron Nola to carry them. We did hear this is interesting here. Tonight was, again, there's another stat from Corey Seidman. Tonight was the 50th time this year the Phillies have gotten at least 5 innings from their starting pitcher with 2 runs or fewer. So that's even below the standard of a quality start when you're talking about just 5 innings. But 5 innings, 2 runs, the 50th time this year they've gotten a starter to go 5 innings and give up 2 runs or less. They're 38-12 in those 50 games. They're 24-46 in all of their other games. That's insane. So we talk about the four-run number for the Phillies. Getting to four runs, the Phillies have the third-best record in baseball, I think it is. Or maybe now it's the fourth-best record in baseball when they score four or more runs. You look at the five innings pitched and two earned runs or less by a starting pitcher is perhaps an even bigger number, or as big a number. And when you get both of those in the same game, you get nights like we saw tonight, an 11-1 drubbing of the Cubs. We did find out before the game that the Phillies are going to lose a member of their starting rotation for the rest of the season. We talked about on episode 809, Jake Arrieta is going to miss the rest of the season. He is going to get that surgery. It was time. It was obvious after the game in San Francisco on Sunday night. It had to be over. It had to be done. We talked about it on the last podcast. Finally, Jake Arrieta relented. Listen, I really wanted the Phillies to sign Jake Arrieta two off seasons ago. It has not worked out. One of those moves that has not worked out, even though it probably should have worked out better than it has. He was decent last year, but he really faltered in the last 2 months of the season, which he said he was dealing with a leg issue. And then this year, he tried to pitch through the bone spurs. I give Jake Arrieta all the credit in the world for pitching through pain. That is not easy to do. Not easy to do at all. So I give Jake Arrieta credit for trying to stick with it here, but he was hurting the team. They are going to have a better chance of success putting Zach Eflin out there. And Eflin is going to take his spot in the rotation. Logan Morrison was recalled from AAA as the Phillies needed another bat with Corey Dickerson. Not hurt enough to go on the injured list, but he was hit on the hand by a pitch the other night, and so he might miss a game or two here. But with Jake Arrieta going on the injured list, it's going to be Zach Eflin taking his spot in the starting rotation. And at least with Eflin, the ceiling is there for him to give you more than five innings. Jake Arrieta wasn't going to give you more than five, and chances are he wasn't going to give you two runs or less in those five innings. Chances are he's going to give up three, four, or five runs, and you just can't do that every fifth day. And so the Phillies finally admitted that. Jake Arrieta finally admitted that. He is going to be out for the rest of the season. He should be back for next year. He's going to obviously, you can't imagine that he wouldn't, opt into the third year of his contract with the Phils, the third and final year of his deal, and so he'll be back in the rotation in 2020, and I don't think you can expect anything of Arrieta. You certainly can't go into 2020 expecting him to be your number two starter. That's something this team has to recognize, and I know there's not a lot out there, but even if you're just going to go out and get Madison Bumgarner, which again, I'm not wild about, you can't have Jake Arrieta being your number two starter next year and expect to contend for the National League East. So the Phillies win the first two games of their three-game series against the Chicago Cubs. A very good start to the homestand. It was a fun night at the Ball Yard on Wednesday night. Charlie Manuel's first game in the dugout as hitting coach. The Phillies hit a bunch of bombs, score 11 runs. They run Cole Hamels out of the game early. Maybe this is something we see a little bit more here in the second half of the season. For the first time in a while, I'm feeling good about the Philadelphia Phillies. And now it's time for your stat of the week. The Phillies, a couple JT Realmuto stats to throw at you for this week. The Phillies are 13-3 this year when JT Realmuto homers. So somebody should tell JT Realmuto that he needs to homer more. That just makes sense. I mean, listen, anybody can analyze baseball, folks. It's that easy. It's really that simple. Get your own podcast. And from the Good Fight stat guru, Schmenkman, he tweeted out something that I thought was interesting. Realmuto, we know, has been a little bit below average offensively, or at least until the last couple of games. I think now he's back to being above average offensively for a catcher so far this season by the numbers, the weighted runs created and all that. But Realmuto now has 43 extra base hits through 119 games this season, which puts him on pace for 58. That would be the fifth highest total by a Phillies catcher in a single season. He has 26 doubles on pace for 35. The Phillies' record for doubles by a catcher in a season is 35 by Darren Dalton in the pennant-winning season of 1993. And folks, that'll do it for episode number 310 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to the great Ellen Adair for coming back on the podcast. A reminder, folks, head on over to the Hittin' Season Patreon to check out everything we've got there and to become a Patreon member of Hittin' Season. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season and leave a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast, the Good Feed podcast feed, and let us know what you think of the show. A 5-star rating would help us out a ton, kids. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.